Welcome to THA Talks, for free thought and open minds. Hello, I'm Paul Overtelly and you're listening to edition 111 of THA Talks, the alternative podcast show from the UK, putting out weekly shows that are available across the globe. If you'd like to check out our full archive, just go to www.thatalks.com to listen to or to download all our free content. Our talks include news, conspiracies, spirituality, the occult, science, history, art, philosophy, religion and much more. For anyone who'd like to contact us and give some feedback, maybe recommend a guest for the show, you can email us at info@thatalks.com or you can go to our website and check out our contacts tab there. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the show via our RSS feed, and you can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher and many other podcast directories out there. Well, hello ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in again. Always good to be back here on THA Talks this Easter Sunday, chilling out. And I have had a pretty chilled out weekend, apart from working on the house as usual, working on my new room, which I'm looking forward to doing because it's going to make my studio here a bit more of a kick-ass studio and is going to help me in the coming weeks and months as we sort of develop the show a little bit more. As I told you last edition, very much on the agenda to do that. And I think the guest we've got on this evening, I think it's going to be very interesting because he comes from a little bit of a different perspective than a lot of conspiracy researchers. But before we address this evening's guest, I think it is time that we should really go across the pond for a THA Bond and a girl called Shana Collins.
Hi, Paul. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, or Eostra.
David's going to get me for that one.
Yeah, I say it with an Italian accent for some reason, but I'm half Italian, so I can't. Iostra. But it's, she's very much celebrating this weekend. Have you had any chocolate eggs?
Oh, good Lord, no. I'm waiting for everything to go on sale tomorrow, actually, because we don't tend to celebrate the regular processes of things. We did actually enjoy the warm moon, last full moon, and I'm looking forward to celebrating Seward's Folly on the 30th in America got Alaska.
I actually had to get David Parry bought me an Easter egg, which is very nice to him, but I have a feeling I'm going to have to give it to my niece because it's got Peppa Pig on it. So I don't think I'm going to be able to eat that. She'll kill me, so I'm going to have to give that to her. I don't know if you know Peppa Pig out in America.
Oh yes.
Oh right, yeah. Well, it's Peppa Pig. I mean, you can't not give that to your niece when she's got that. But anyway, good to have you back on again. And I mean, today's guest is going to be really interesting. We've had him on before, Alexander Baron, who came on to talk about the Holocaust and an alternative perspective on the history. They're obviously a very controversial one we done then. And all his views are controversial. He shoots from the hip. He doesn't hold back. And he's going to come on today to talk to us about victim narratives, which basically we're going to indulge in the pedophilia rings and the accusations thrown at a lot of actors out there and movie stars and pop stars, politicians. But he has a very different perspective on it, in that he feels that it's more of an agenda to project a bad image in society, and that there's a lot of dishonesty going around it. So I know there's a lot of people that are very convinced in that conspiracies. I've been convinced in the past, but I'm always willing to listen to new perspectives. So I'm looking forward to this one, and I'm sure you are as well.
Most definitely. I listened to edition 93 and was very intrigued. I'm very excited to speak with this particular guest, and I think we should have a fun, if controversial, conversation.
Let's go. Hello, Alexander. How are you doing?
As good as can be managed, I think.
Well, it's good to have you back on. You were last on in edition 93, where we talked about a very controversial Holocaust denial or revisionism subject, which provoked all kinds of reactions, and as you'd expect. But we said we'd get you back on, and here you are. It's different subject this time, something equally as controversial. And although you kind of have a different perspective on this, we're talking about the pedophile chains, a lot of the people that are getting arrested in these celebrities, politicians. And it seems to be an ongoing theme at the moment. And you've got some interesting research on this. So how's about we start off unfolding what got you interested in it, and how you started off with that path, so to speak?
Well, this is my grand unified field theory, if you like, the theory of everything. But if you want to get any more reductionist, the problem with the world today is human nature. But I've got it down to two things. One is usury, the other is victim narratives. Usury can leave to another time, but victim narratives, it comes to the Holocaust, the Jewish question, all the political stuff, all the bad stuff that goes on in politics. I've been thinking along these lines for some time. Other people have done similar things. I mean, the anti-feminist logger Alison Tiedemann calls them threat narratives, but people look at, I mean, the Jewish question is a big thing. I mean, excuse me, Lincoln Rockwell, the American Nazi leader who was assassinated, I think, 1967. He became wise to the Jewish question. He met some sort of spiritually minded people, and they pointed out Jews control this, that, the other, banks, the economy, media, and of course, you mentioned this. Of course, you denounced as an anti-Semite, but the whole thing about power is the sort of power we're talking about here is it isn't economic power. I mean, the fact that a particular minority, a particular group of people have got economic power or even political power isn't necessarily that important. For example, Michael Jackson had a lot of economic power, but that didn't stop him being dragged into court by chancers who took advantage of his rather peculiar attitude who had towards underage boys. I don't know, Jackson wasn't a paedophile, but that was a public perception, and he walked into it. The whole thing about the Jewish question is the Jewish issue is it's a victim narrative. Now, a narrative is simply a story, but a victim narrative is a way of blaming everybody else for everything that happens to you, whether it's an individual, a religious group, a race, a profession, whatever, it's always somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
Now, we've all got victim narratives because, in a sense, we're all victims. I mean, we're born to start with. And if you reach the age of about 12 or 13, you're going to have some sort of pain in your life, aren't you? You're going to have physical pain, you know, spiritual pain, whatever. And if you don't reach that age, you'll be a victim anyway, by definition. But there were some groups have been pushing the whole victim narrative for a long, long time. And this is the center of what we call Jewish or Zionist power. I really only put the pieces together after the Jimmy Savile. I started doing some research on the Jimmy Savile thing for the benefit of overseas viewers and overseas listeners. Jimmy Savile was a disc jockey and TV presenter, and after his death in 2011, there was a big supposed expose about him being a serial abuser of underage girls and occasional rapist. And you had all these people crawled out of the woodwork, and there are now literally hundreds of people, mostly women, but a few men, have accused Savile of being a paedophile and of being abusing them. Now, on the surface of it, you think hundreds of people, they can't all be lying, they can't all be delusional. But if you actually look at the documentation, the fact that so many of these allegations were from years ago means that most of them can't be proved either way. But a lot of them, Savile did a lot of work with hospitals. He was raising awareness of mental health issues, and he did a lot for a spinal unit at spinal injuries unit at Aylesbury. And the hospital authorities commissioned reports investigating various allegations against Sal, and they're all online. And you read them, and there's absolutely nothing there.
Mm.
A very typical example, it was meant to have abused an underage girl at Delapole Hospital, which no longer exists. And they went to extraordinary lengths to chase this girl, who was actually 21 at the time. And she said that she didn't consider herself a victim because nothing happened. And basically, all that did happen was that Saville was walking around the hospital with an escort and he spoke to her.
Right.
And the whole, but you've got this thing, oh, victims must be believed, survivors must be believed, and believed uncritically. And there's this whole narrative of once the narrative is set up, the target group, the victim group, survivor group, whatever they want to call it, is above criticism. I'll give you an extreme example of this. You're quite a bit younger than me, I know, but I grew up in the 1960s, and do you know about Myra Hindley? I take it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, she was like the devil incarnate.
That's it. Yeah, oh, nasty situation that one. Yeah.
Well, that was in the 1960s. Around about 1971-72, this idea developed that anytime a woman did something bad. This is second wave feminism, women's liberation, as it's called.
Yeah.
Anytime a woman did something bad, it's always got to be a man responsible.
Mm.
Even if she killed someone or did something really terrible, it was either the patriarchy, as they call it now, or maybe her father abused her, maybe she was sexually abused by a wicked uncle, or maybe she was at Sunday school and the Sunday school teacher humiliated her in front of the class because she couldn't recite something from one of the Gospels. It's always got to be a man or men as responsible. And this is an extreme case of the victim narrative. Jodi Arias is, I don't know if you had time to look at that. Are you familiar with Jodi Arias?
Not off the top of my head with that one, no.
Well, this shows you how absurd it is. She's doing a life sentence for murdering her lover, Travis Alexander. Now, she met him, and they had an affair for about a year, I suppose it was. He was close to 30 and theoretically a virgin because he was a Mormon, and they believed no sex before marriage.
Yeah.
And he met her. He was intelligent, charismatic, doing well for himself. He worked for in insurance, legal insurance, and he did presentations, everything. It was a guy who was going places. He met her. They'd sort of in one of these relationships in which sparks fly. But he wanted to have his cake and eat it. He wanted his dirty little secret, is what she was, and he wanted to marry a Mormon girl. And this led to bad things on her part. He finally realized she was no good for him when she hacked into his email and sent pornography to his boss and all his friends. So he ditched her. Then she hatched a plan to murder him. She hadn't seen him for quite a while. And she was living with her grandmother in California. And over the course of weeks, if not months, she planned a murder. First thing she did, she staged a burglary at her grandmother's home, stole a gun. Then she hired a car, and she drove 1,000 miles across the desert with gas cans in the back of her car, so she'd avoid petrol stations where she'd be caught on CCTV. She got to his house. She bluffed her way in the promise of sex. They went to bed. And then she decided she wanted to take a photograph of him in a shower. She was a photographer. She's quite a good artist. So she buffed him in the shower. She turned around, Charis, and let me get a photograph of his pecs. And while his back was turned, she stabbed him. She stabbed him about nearly 30 times. She almost hacked his head off. And then the gun, which was a bit superfluous, she put a bullet in his brain. She cleaned up as best she could, but she left some very critical evidence there. The photographs from the she took out the car from the camera and put it in a washing machine, but the tech boys were able to retrieve it and actually show the murder. And she drove off. She left some phone messages to get on his answer phone to give the impression that she hadn't seen him. And then she went to meet an ex-boyfriend to cook up an alibi. When she was arrested, first of all, she said, I haven't been there. I haven't seen drugs for ages. Then when that wasn't tenable, she said, oh, well, I was there. He was attacked by two people dressed as ninjas. I don't know. Didn't recognise them.
Yeah.
Then when that wasn't tenable either, she claimed that he'd attacked her. And it was self-defence. Now, you think, she was tried for capital murder. She ended up being a life sentence. You think that nobody in his right mind or her right mind would say that Travis was the perpetrator and she was the victim. But unbelievably, the defence produced a so-called expert witness, Alice LaVoylette, a domestic abuse counsellor, who said that he was the perpetrator and she was the victim. This is how silly it is. Now, this narrative, which I call the denial of female evil, has been around 45 years, maybe. The Jewish victim narrative has been around since the Exodus, 3,500 years. And anti-Semitism as much as started with the crucifixion in the Great JC, which is very topical now, Easter Sunday. But it's been around for 3,500 years. And if you look at Jewish history, it's always... It was never us. It was never our fault. It's always the wicked goyim. They persecuted us. No Jews ever did anything bad. We've been expelled from this country for that. The ultra-Orthodox don't buy into that. They see anti-Semitism as something keeping them in line, so to keep them on the straight and narrow, whereas the Zionists believe it's a club which bat the goyim overhead. But the whole thing about the Jewish question is ultimately isn't anything to do with Jews at all. And you find these victim narratives everywhere. You find the feminist victim narrative, homosexuals have got one. Even the anti-smoking industry is a victim narrative. Mm. Because over the years, smoking has become progressively more dangerous to the point where they believe that passive smoking is more dangerous than actual smoking. And they're all pushing these ludicrous lies with contrived statistics, etc. And the idea is that unless something is done about this, unless we get more money for our cause, more restrictions on freedom, etc., the sky will fall.
Yeah.
And this is the whole thing. So the whole thing about the Jewish question is really, there is no Jewish hand behind it. There's no hand behind it. It's the way politics works and the way these groups have taken control. And a lot of the evil that politicians do is not down to politicians themselves. It's down to them listening to these people who have enormous influence out of all proportion to the things they're saying are complete rubbish. And yet, because they're plugging this victim narrative, people listen to them, politicians listen to them, and bad laws are made on the back of it.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what you were mentioning about Jimmy Savile, what struck me about that was the David Icke's. I think David Icke was saying for years, "Oh, Jimmy Savile, he's kiddie fiddling and all this kind of stuff." And of course, when it came out, people were like, "Oh my gosh, you know, he was right." And there were so many people. So, I mean, are you saying that Jimmy Savile was completely innocent and he's just hung out to dry, or was it just that they used that as a way of making it worse than it was? Or
well, let me put it this way: hundreds of people have putting claims against Jimmy Savile's estate and claims against the BBC, etc. Now, a lot of the BBC stuff is complete rubbish because I've been to the BBC and you have to sign in. And, I mean, the idea that teenage girls were... I mean, one of these lunatics claims she saw Gary Glitter raping an underage girl in Savile's dressing room. Mm. Complete nonsense. I mean, it's only really... girls on Top of the Pops in the 1960s and that, clearly, but child actors have been around for a long time, and there's a lot of legislation. I mean, Noel Coward was a child actor. He was born in 1899. Mm. Child actors always had chaperones, and the idea that girls and boys could walk around and be assaulted at will in a studio is complete nonsense. But what I want to say is, if the police had done their job, all these people have made claims against the Salmon Estate, if they'd said to them, right, you sign this for your compensation, we'll investigate thoroughly. If it turns out that you've lied, you'll be prosecuted for perjury, for fraud or whatever. If they'd done that to all these people, how many of them do you think would have claimed? Very few, I reckon. Very, very few.
Yeah. And then there was also, of course, Rolf Harris, who he's the latest one to be strung up.
Well, that's disgusting what they've done to him. But it's all victim narratives. And now he's being convicted, he's an easy target. But the point is, I mean, it's imagine a crazy woman walks into the police station tomorrow and says, Paul Abatelli raped me yesterday afternoon.
Mm.
Right? Well, they come to see you, might be arrested. And you say, well, look, I was here with a friend and we've been on the radio. Right? That's okay. I mean, they're right off as a nutter. They may prosecute them. But 10 years from now, what are you going to say?
Mm.
Yeah? I mean, and with celebrities, you have one lunatic comes forward, then another one, and then a chancer, and then a fantasist. And the whole thing, and they use something called corroboration by volume. All these people can't be lying. Well, yes, they can.
Mm.
And it's all part of the victim narrative.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Kyle.
No, after you.
Well, I was just going to say, listening to all this, it does resonate with me with regards to how the West is pretty much presented to the world now. It's got so much negative things about it now, so it's almost like it's just falling down. And I think it is reflective, and I think generally the West seems to be quite self-hateful at the moment. So when you hear these stories, what you're saying, what does make sense of me is, like we say, the victim narratives. It always seems to attack the heart of Western culture and people. Like, if you've got Western heroes, it just makes sense that they just want to knock them down. You must not look up to these people and stuff. And I mean, I haven't looked into what you're saying, all the evidence, but from what you're telling me, there's a part of it that does make sense. So yeah, it is interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing, it's all racism, isn't it? Racism is a victim narrative.
Yeah.
It's a victim narrative. You know, this idea that that the West has, you know, sucked the wealth out of Africa, and there was nothing in Africa before the whites went there.
Mm.
The reality is that, I mean, the whole thing about white supremacy. White supremacy was more or less British supremacy, actually, because we go to the world, it's lingua franca, English, and okay, I mean, it wasn't all sunlight and roses, but what would there be without Western civilization, without Western technology? It's just ludicrous. I've got an actual quote here from, if I can dig this out, from a guy. I don't think the name David Webb means anything to you. He's an anti-censorship activist. He died in 2012.
David Webb.
He summed it up.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
Oh, here it is, yeah. The highly organized, vociferous pro-censorship factors. And bearing in mind, he's talking about censorship. This could be anything. In a role as self-appointed guardians of the nation's morals, have far too long succeeded in forcing their minority opinions on a much more liberal-minded, tolerant majority, often using highly emotive, dishonest propaganda to spread their oppressive and bigoted doctrines. And that sums it up. I mean, he's talking specifically about censorship here. But it's everything. Anything doesn't conform to the politically correct agenda.
Mm. I mean, one thing before China comes in, I'd like to touch on. What about the Houses of Parliament in with politics now? I mean, that seems to be ugly, and there seems to be a lot of dirt being dug up there. I mean, would that be a part of this? Because I'm not sure whether the so-called elite that would like to project this image on us, would they do it to our politicians? I mean, that's where it starts to get really, the worms start coming, falling out, you know?
What do you mean? This paedophile ring? Not
yeah, the paedophile ring.
Well, it's. I mean, the people are promoting this are head cases.
Mm.
A lot of them, and you've got lawyers who look. They one of the latest targets was Edward Heath, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Now, Ted Heath became leader of the Conservative Party in 1965, and there was already trouble brewing in Northern Ireland then. two years later, you had the split with the IRA, and you had this massive, you know, we saw the campaigns of shooting people and bombs on the mainland.
Yeah.
But by 1965, any conservative politician was always protected. Heath became, he was Prime Minister in 1970. He ousted his great rival, Harold Wilson, and he was ousted by Wilson in turn. He fell out with Thatcher, but he stayed on, and he was father of the House in 2005 when he died. He died in 2005. He was father of the House when he, at one point, he was the longest serving MP. He clocked up half a century of Parliament. He was quite a wealthy man. He had a house with, he had a cook, he had a chauffeur, and he had a special branch guard. Now, when did he sneak off to Elm Guest House or to Dolphin Square to murder and torture boys? It's fantasy, complete fantasy. And how anybody could, this sort of thing can't work in so-called liberal democracies. If you have one man in charge or a small group of men, like Saddam Hussein or Colonel Gaddafi, he can do pretty much as he wants. But what happens here, if a body is found, right? If somebody reports finding a body in the park, that's the phone to police. It's logged on a register, and it's all done dealt with at a local level. The idea that politicians can jump in and scupper these inquiries. I mean, the Director of Public Prosecution was done for curb crawling. You know, Tony Blair's son, when he was 16, was found in Leicester Square drunk, and somebody tipped off. They shouldn't have done that because of his age, but they tipped off the media. Well, if a Prime Minister can't cover up for his drunk son, how can people cover up for rings that are murdering and torturing and murdering boys? We're not talking about a bit of groping here, you know, a bit of slap and tickle. We're talking about murdering underage boys. It's fantasy.
Yeah.
And Leon Britton, there's this mad woman who accused him of raping her 45 years ago. Well, if that had happened in the 1970s, then it's shown at the door.
Yeah,
quite rightly so. But instead, they put in a big investigation, and chasing old men or dead men is easy. It's better than chasing real criminals who might have guns and shoot back.
Mm. Okay, well, Shana, are you taking this in?
Most definitely. Very interesting conversation, Alexander. It's very nice to speak with you.
Not everybody says that.
Well, I missed the last one, but I did enjoy listening to Edition 93 and hearing your perspective on some things. Now, by the time we wrap up, you may wonder where I've put my tinfoil hat, because I do come from a little bit different perspective. I think that's one of the great things about our show, is that we're able to look at so many different ideas and ideals and perspectives on different things. I come from a place of more anything being possible, just as likely as for something to be possible as it is implausible. So we may butt heads, but I think that it's all in good fun.
Yeah.
So one thing that you brought up that I wanted to touch on was that there is, to me, something to be said about how a group can use an action that they require of all people to browbeat them into submission. It's a reoccurring theme of, like, if you tell, well, then I'll tell. And personally, I have little doubt that there are nefarious groups with goals and aims, either esoteric or not, that include ritualistic sadism, abuse, sacrifice, what have you. Now, whether or not outsiders believe, I do think that there are groups that are very adamant about it, and they act accordingly. So my question is would it be fair to say that you question the idea of the high-profile accusations, or if you think the overall concept is nonsense?
Well, I mean, we know that people who worship the devil. No. I mean, we've seen Aleister Crowley, and there have been people who commit satanic murders. I mean, it was the the Chicago Rippers, which wasn't really satanic, but the people with weird beliefs that do strange things. there have been satanic killings, yeah. The people, there was a girl in Tracy Wigginton in Australia, the famous lesbian vampire case. But the idea that there can be, there's an elite paedophile ring or an elite satanic ring that controls the country, that sort of breeds babies for sacrifice and so on. These are really fantasies from people who have, from very disturbed individuals. There may be a grain of truth in something, but when they start bringing out all these fantasies, they just make it difficult to investigate real cases. I mean, like the Great Orkney case, which was meant to be satanic abuse, there was actually, I think, one person there who was abusing a child. But they blew up it, and all these people were arrested, and it was a paedophile ring. It's complete nonsense. These things can't exist on that scale because, you have criminal conspiracies, but when you have something which involves something as serious as murder, people are covering their own backs, and as soon as word leaks out, somebody's going to squeal. You know, it can't operate the same way sort of Islamic State does, where they control everything and anything goes, because murder is a criminal offence, is a very serious offence in the UK and other countries, and there's no getting away from that, and so. These things can't exist like that. They can't exist on that scale. I mean, give an example. Greville Janner was, no doubt he abused one boy. Cyril Smith was probably almost certainly doing things with underage boys he shouldn't have been doing. But the idea that there can be a great network of people and committing murders and stuff, it really. I mean, it doesn't work. Not in the sort of society we got now, for all its faults.
Well, you say that in the UK, murder is a big deal. In the US, it tends to be as well. But I would have to disagree, because there are so many people that are not considered people in our society. The homeless, the prostitutes, the drug addicts. It would be very easy to coordinate different kind of sacrifices and murders, as you say, and cover them up if you have the kind of money and means that these people have. So I guess for me to consider the idea that it's nonsense is putting a bit of rose-colored glasses on it.
Where's the evidence that's happening? Where's the evidence for that?
Well, the problem is, if you have evidence, they're not doing their jobs correctly. Which we can agree to disagree on that, but there have also been cult accusations for large entertainment groups. One in particular that I won't necessarily name for libel concerns, but there's been a lot of news, a lot of stories, a lot of documentaries, John, even on YouTube about this particular.
But these people don't know how to assess evidence, and a lot of these people and. They're three sandwiches short of a picnic. I mean, as I pointed out in the last program, everybody's got a voice now. Anybody can go on YouTube and make a video, a quite professional-looking video, about all manner of stuff, and it can have absolutely no substance to it at all. There were no gatekeepers anymore. In the old days, you'd have stories, gossip and rumour. But there was a law of libel. Now, in effect, there is no law of libel. I mean, for the mainstream press, there is, but anybody can publish anything on YouTube or Facebook. If you believed a fraction of the things there, I mean, if these people had so much power, we wouldn't be able to have this conversation. It's as simple as that.
Well, it kind of goes back to the last time that you were on the show. David had mentioned that there's so much disinformation available in our media today, and it seems like somebody has dropped the ball on new media journalism. It doesn't seem like a lot of people out there are really doing their homework, so to speak, and finding those first-person accounts and the facts that you're looking for. But it is hard to discredit the sequence of events from going back to an idea that you brought up earlier, the child stardom, and how a lot of them spiral into abuses of drugs, alcohol, promiscuity, and then looking at the connection between some of the symbolism used in their area of expertise, music, movies, so on and so forth. Would you say that this is an example of the victim narrative having to do with the celebrity psychosis, or do you think that it's all, again, going back to the idea that it's fabricated, there is no underlying hand objective?
A lot of the time it's just irresponsible media. It's also that dog bites man is no story. Man bites dog is a story. nobody bites anybody. There's nothing there. And you find this time and time again. You find these stories all over the press, and they're there to sell newspapers, to ride off people's coattails. Maybe some journalist doesn't like somebody for whatever reason. They make up stories about them. You find this all the time. I mean, you can't believe a lot of the things which are written about politicians. You may not appreciate this until they start writing horrible things about you. And then you'll think, well, yeah, was I really, was I really involved in murder or drug dealing, or whatever? the fact is that when we're talking about serious crimes here, serious crimes do leave serious trails, and somebody may get away with one murder, but if they keep committing murders and keep getting abusing people or whatever, they're going to get caught eventually. But what we're having here is not somebody being brought to book. We're having allegations made 20, 30 more years later, which from people, a lot of these people, are really not quite right in the head. We saw this with the satanic abuse thing, with this a paedophile thing, this Operation Midland, which has now been shut down. It was basically, you know, one nutter come forward, then another one. You had one guy identified himself, and then you had a woman who claimed to have been sexually abused over a period of years in the forest by an MP, two MPs, as police officers stood guard. Well, why didn't she say anything at the time? Because it never happened at the time. It only happened in her tiny mind. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are not quite right in the head, to put it mildly.
So it kind of goes into the sensationalism and the hive mindset, like what we see with the Bill Cosby case.
I'm glad you mentioned that. The public perception of Cosby is that he's a serial rapist who's been drugging and raping women for decades. If you actually look at the evidence, what happened? What happened was that one woman accused him of drugging her a year after it happened. We know there was an encounter between him and Andrea Constand. After the authorities refused to take any action at the time, the information was leaked to the public, were leaked to the press, and all these other women crawled out of the woodwork. Now, this is actually a very interesting clash of victim narratives here, because initially you had all these white women accusing Cosby, and there was one black woman who was obviously, I mean, she was a twice convicted prostitute and a convicted false accuser. So she didn't really count. She had all these white women accusing Cosby. Now, what side do the media take? Do they side with the women and be branded racist? Or do they side with Cosby and become rape apologists? And then you had the Beverly Johnson accused him. And then the dynamic shifted. And now, with his supposed admission about his admission of obtaining qualia, the perception is that Cosby is a serial rapist. But when you actually look at the allegations, a lot of them, I mean, there's one woman, Joan Tarshis, who accused him of orally raping on two occasions. And this woman, I mean, as an academic who's also a Cosby fan, he did some research on her. He showed that she was refuted by chronology. She didn't meet Cosby where she said she met him. And also, she's a woman who's really not right in head. She was talking with aliens telepathically. Louisa Moritz who accused Cosby of already raping her on a specific date and a specific venue, and he wasn't there. And it took a little bit of fact-checking. Yet the media parrots these women as though they are credible witnesses. And you have this attorney, Gloria Allred, appealing for them to come forward. She produced the most absurd accusations. And she's using this as an attack on statutes of limitations in the United States. And if they allow that, you'll see the sort of horror stories we have here, where you'll have a celebrity who'll be accused of groping or even raping a woman 20 years ago. Another one comes forward, then another one, and then the prosecution sums up, well, none of these women knows each other, so it's either a conspiracy or the defendant is lying. And it's complete dishonest rhetoric, which does deceive juries. But the idea that Cosby was done a fraction of the things which is laid at his door is really an example of dishonest media. If the media really looked into these allegations, they'd find a lot of them would be refuted, and some of them have been. The Goins, she's been refuted, and the others, there's no way of proving them this way or the other. And say 20 years from now, somebody could say something similar about you, either you involved in a sex scandal or murdering people, etc. And you get dozens of people come forward making allegations. People who are not right in head, people who are in it for money, people who want their 15 minutes of fame. And yet none of it holds up. None of it.
There does seem to be a lack of collaborative verification or a secondary source for a lot of things that come out in new media journalism. But I do want to touch on the fact that the language that you use here, there was the first accuser for Bill Cosby, and you said, and she doesn't count because she had two priors for prostitution.
Constand is the only one who has any credibility at all. She's the woman who first accused him. And then what happened was that was back in 2004. She brought an accident act in 2005, and then the information was leaked, and then 13 other women came forward. And then in October 2014, it started again. And but all these women came out. Well, I mean, Shalon Lash is the one. She has two convictions for prostitution and one for false reporting. Now, that dents her credibility, but is there any evidence she even met Cosby? You know? Is there any evidence she ever met him?
Going back to the idea of the credibility, that kind of that segues back to the idea of people that aren't necessarily people. So if you have priors, if you have false accusal and things like that, who's going to believe you even if something does happen? So that makes you a wonderful candidate to be attacked.
Well, her story was that she picked up these convictions later. But, I mean, why wouldn't she say something? Like, look, if this guy had been going around drugging and raping women for decades, a big celebrity, you'd think somebody would have done something. You'd think somebody would have sold a story. Nobody did. No, nobody at all. And then you say, yeah, some idiot journalist saying, streets don't lie, everybody knows this. You know, everybody knows lots of things. Everybody knows that the Israelis did 9/11. Everybody knows that Bill Clinton was responsible for the Oklahoma bombing. It's complete nonsense. When you actually ask for evidence, why didn't you do anything? Oh, I was too afraid to say anything. I didn't think I'd be believed. Well, if you didn't think you'd be believed then, why do you think you'd be believed now? Because all these other weirdos and freaks and liars have come out, and you want a share of the action. That's it, you know. What do people do? What do women do when they've been sexually assaulted? Yeah. What do? They don't go and hide away. This is part of the fantasy. What do people do when they've been the victim of an injustice? They make a noise about it, don't they?
I think it really depends on the person, though, because you're talking about throwing everybody's psychology into one basket. If you've been abused your entire life, chances are, no, you're not going to say anything.
Yeah, but if you look at the women who have been accused in Cosby, like they're aspiring actresses, or aspiring this and aspiring that. And some have been refuted by chronology, and the others, they've just come in and they've thrown their oar in. And the only corroboration is the fact that a lot of people are saying broadly similar things. Well, it sounds impressive, but it isn't impressive at all. It isn't impressive at all.
No, I'm with you on Cosby. I think a lot of it has no basis in reality, and some of the accusations that do are just part of the fact that they were involved in the entertainment industry in the 60s and 70s. It just is part of the taboo of that time. There was a lot of drugs going on, and a lot of promiscuity, and a lot of different things that maybe these people are now looking at going back, and people that have some basis for their accusations are looking at it from a perspective of maybe they feel bad, they're guilty,
this is the victim narrative, you know. Mm-hmm. It's in this case it's a woman who goes to bed with a prince and wakes up next to a frog.
Right.
And she said, God, did I really do that? Did I really go with that? I wouldn't have done that. And then she says, well, I didn't do it at all, I was raped. And you find it isn't necessarily a sexual thing. You find it everywhere. People blaming other people for their poor judgment, and it's always somebody else's fault. But so the idea that Cosby was drugging and raping women all over the place, and that Jimmy Savile was abusing hundreds of kids is none of it stands up to scrutiny, and yet. There are a lot of people making money out of this. You know? That's it. A lot of lawyers are making money out of it.
And that's why it keeps going, it seems like, is because there is an almighty dollar involved.
Yeah, that's one thing, so, yeah.
So, Paul, I've monopolized the conversation for a little while there. How are you doing?
Yeah, no, it's been an interesting little debate. And it's, I mean, I see both sides because I think when you look at entertainment and stuff, I think you do get a lot of arseholes in that sort of industry, be it the Hollywood industry or music industry. Some, you know, you tend to have to be a bit of an arsehole to succeed in some of those things. You know, I'm not saying everyone. I've got some good friends in the music industry and so on, so I'm not obviously pigeonholing everyone. But so it doesn't surprise me that there would be a lot of pedophiles or that kind of thing going on. But at the same time, what Alexander's bringing up here, that's, as I said earlier, that does resonate with me because I think it does go hand in hand to what's just generally going on in the West at the moment anyway. It just seems to be, as I say, the victim narrative is there. I mean, it just seems to be if you're on the minority and you can be victimized, then you're automatically more right than someone that's in the majority, be it any of these groups. And it does seem to be, and also just the what is politically correct, you just get so much weight behind it. Like, for example, what was that guy, was his name Roosh? And there was this big outcry, he's supporting rape. Now, researching the guy, he comes across as a bit of a sleazebag and not the type of guy that any father would want their daughter hanging out with. But he wasn't advocating, he wasn't sort of promoting rape, it was a satire piece.
Actually, he's charismatic, but I wouldn't pay for one of his seminars.
Yeah, it's...
It was a bit like the Swift's A Modest Proposal about, you know, eating babies to solve the famine. What he said is that if rape was legal on private property, women wouldn't make bad choices. They wouldn't go into a room with a guy, get drunk with him, and then the next day or the next month or the next year accuse him of rape. some really absurd one I came across to show the way that feminists are brainwashing women on an American campus. It was a drunken hookups, they call them, don't they? It's the only reason I'm sorry I never went to university. But they met up, this two students, they had sex on the first date. That was in January. They had sex again in February, and then they were sort of friends after that. Then she sees him with getting friendly with another girl in July. Tells a friend she thinks she was sexually assaulted. Then in October she reports him, and she said she was raped by him in January, but then she had sex with him in February. Well, that was consensual. You have to wonder at the mentality of these women who make these allegations. But it's a case of brainwashing. Again, the victim narrative, we must always believe the victim. And so in another example of the victim narratives colliding, you got the Jewish question you had the Jewish question in Europe, like after the Second World War. You had the Zionist rape of Palestine. That's all a matter of fact now, a matter of record. Lots of people acknowledge that. But what you actually had, from the 1960s, certainly from the 1970s, you had the Palestinians building their own counter-victim narrative. So you had the ridiculous situation where Jews can be attacked as Zionists, and people even advocate, leftists will advocate murdering them. In the context of the Middle East, and yet they'll stand shoulder to shoulder with them in the struggle against the internal anti-Semitism in Europe and elsewhere. I mean, say that there are victims, there are real victims, but we have to get away from this victim narrative thing and sort out.
Well, it's obviously
for everybody.
It's obviously it's often the case. Where if you're debating with someone that has this victim narrative, you can actually really screw with their argument because they've got so much contradictions to uphold that kind of narrative. It can kind of twist into what was it I was saying? I think it was with a lot of this Black Lives Matter stuff that's going on in America at the moment, which is very controversial. Now, I mean, obviously any type of racism, it's really bad and stuff, but sometimes you get the feeling it's just rolling along with that politically correct argument. And it's like, I think it come down to the flag, the Confederate flag, and people saying, oh, you know, this is bad. But there's two sides of it, because there's the argument that the people that were defending the Confederate, the South at the time, they weren't really fighting to keep slavery. They were fighting to keep their independence and to have control over the decisions they make in that part of America. So that they'll say, oh, well, you know, that's rubbish. You were fighting for slavery. So then you twist it on the other way and say, so are you saying that the North then were committing their lives to free slavery? But they won't say, oh, you know, Northern America fought for the right to abolish slavery. You won't get that. But yet, which one do they want? Do you know what I mean? It's like I've had that argument before, and it's not that I'm against any. If I just want to clarify, if there is any racism or any, it does happen. You get prejudice, but just groups like that, I just think they're just seizing that.
Well, the whole Black Lives Matter,
that politically correct machine, you know.
The reality is the American police are out of control, and the reason so many blacks end up with being shot by it's not because they're black; it's because they're easy targets and because they're part of the underclass.
It's a class issue rather than a racial issue, yeah.
Well, no, it's just American police are out of control. I mean, the analogy I always use is, you remember the incident with Lee Rigby, the beheading?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you saw what happened when the police, the British police, who they don't use guns regularly, even those who are technically trained don't use guns all that often. They had these two lunatics coming towards them. They could have been wearing suicide vests for all that they know. And they shot them in the legs and they took them down professionally. Now, if you can do that to two extremely dangerous individuals, why was Michael Brown shot and killed? I mean, it's the American police are out of control.
Yeah.
That's the bottom. And of course, the other thing is you've got the gun. It isn't entirely the police. It's the American gun culture, because police in the UK regularly stop cars, and no problem. But in the US, if a police officer does stop a car, it isn't that unlikely he'll be facing an armed situation. But it isn't a racial issue at all. It's been played as one, but it isn't one.
Well, that's pretty much, we're heading towards that time now. Shana, is there anything you'd like to throw in here before we start to wrap it up?
There are so many things that we'll have to have you on again, Alexander, so that we can continue the conversation, because there's at least, you know, a dozen more conversations and elements of this and aspects of this victim narrative specifically that I'd love to get into. I agree with you 100% that our law enforcement system in the U.S. needs to be revamped, and maybe the police need to remember that their primary job is to protect and serve, and maybe get some ego out of the experience for them. And that might put us in a better place safety-wise. But going back to really quickly, because I know that we're running out of time, there was another assault issue and case in America that I don't know if you know too much about, the story of a pornography actor, James Dean.
Oh, yeah. Again, this is some YouTuber summed it up in a nutshell. He said, if an accuser goes to the media first rather than to the authorities, she has no credibility. And same with that Kesha case as well. If you're the victim of a felony, go to the police.
But so many of them, I guess, even at the beginning, there were a couple of assault charges that came out of the woodwork afterwards, and these were long-time affiliates with James Dean, and these are women that explain that they had consensual relations after the fact.
Did you follow the Gomeshi case in Canada?
No.
Well, that's very interesting, because he was accused by lots of people, but he kept the emails for 13 years, and he's been cleared, and the accusers fell apart on the witness stand. You know, it's very easy to make allegations like this. I would not credit them at all.
Interesting. Well, I would love to have an opportunity to speak with you again for another show. And is there anything that you would want to add? Anything that you're working on? Any new updates to the website?
Very controversial at the moment, but that'll be I'll be on a couple of months yet. So,
alrighty. So, Paul.
Yeah. Well, that's great having you back on again, Alexander. And yeah, it would be good to have you on again in the future to hear more of some more research that you've done. And well, until then, keep up your work, because it's really interesting hearing your side of things, because it is something different and still and does resonate as well. So it's a different point of view that I think is definitely worth paying attention to. So
okay, right, thank you again.
And that was Alexander Barron, another interesting one there. What do you think of that, Shana?
I think it's important that we have so many different views on the show. It's great to be able to debate with somebody and discuss differing points of view that understands that at the end of the day, it's all in good fun. It's all with a positive intention of sharing the information and providing a platform for free thoughts and open minds.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what I said with him, I think sometimes with conspiracies, you can just kind of jump on them because you're so used to it, and you also become quite eager for conspiracies because you get so desperate trying to convince people and open them up to genuine conspiracies, which are certainly out there. Sometimes people can just get a bit addicted to them and jump on every single one, and sometimes you've got to stop and say, whoa, hang on. Because you could be quite, it makes people easily manipulated if you're just going to open up and believe anything. So that's why I kind of respect what Alexander's doing, because he's certainly someone that you can tell just sits down and very much has his own
perspective on what's going on. Maybe he's wrong on some things. There are a couple of things which I might not agree with him about, but definitely I've got a lot of respect for his approach. And yeah, I look forward to having him on again.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that he seems to focus on is that verification. Where are the facts?
That's
and
right.
That's something that is very nice to see.
They're important. They're important. but anyway, I think that we've got to wrap that one up for this week. It's good to have you on again, Shana, and it's been good having Alexander, and it's been good everyone else listening to the show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for spreading the word about the show. Please keep linking this show. Please keep telling your friends about the show. More importantly, keep downloading the show. Definitely got some cool guests coming up. We're going to keep firing them at you over the spring and into the summer. And we're going to be looking forward to the next time. Till then, take care, be brave, be strong, and we'll be seeing you soon. Bye.